Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back to the program the man we like to call our chef in residence. Doyle Moore is his name. For a long time now, he's been stopping by on a regular basis on the first Wednesday, and we talk about cooking. And we always have a good time exchanging stories and recipes and chatting and taking calls from people who listen. And if you've heard the program, you know how we do this. We focus on some particular thing. Sometimes we go off on interesting side streets, but we start out focusing on some particular thing, an ingredient, a dish, and then we talk about that. And he's visited by some culinary spirits or something in weeks before the show, and he calls me on the phone and says, okay, this is what we're going to do. And he called me up recently, and he says, son, I have one word for you. The word is nutmeg. I said, oh, okay. And now you may be thinking, as I said before the news, you may be thinking, well, nutmeg. I can't think of the last time I used nutmeg in something. And I will bet if we go into people's kitchens, we open up their cabinets and we look where they have their herbs and spices and stuff, I'm sure we'll find nutmeg. Although if we ask that person, okay, when was the last time you used this? They might say, I couldn't tell you. The fact is that there are actually, once you start looking, there are a lot of recipes that use it, and it is a good thing. So maybe after today's program, we'll encourage people to experiment with nutmeg. We give some recipes, and maybe there are some folks who are listening this morning to us that have a good recipe that uses nutmeg. And so it's kind of wide open. Could be anything, as long as nutmeg is one of the ingredients. You can call us and share it with us and the other people who are listening. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana folks. Toll free, 800-222-9455.
Yes.
So was there – so I don't remember. You probably told me. What started you thinking about nutmeg in the first place?
It had to do with an obscure, I'm not sure. Somehow I came across something, and nutmeg was mentioned, and I know. I had cooked dinner for some friends, and I had made a dish that that had rutabaga and spinach. I invented the dish. And the response from one of the dinner guests was, that'd be really good if you'd put a little nutmeg in it. I said, you're out of your mind. What are you talking about? What do you mean nutmeg? Nope, that would be real good if you put a little nutmeg in it. And so I thought, well, there's something here that I don't know. I would never have thought of using nutmeg with rutabaga and spinach. However, upon trying to find out about it, you always use it in rutabaga and you always use it in spinach. And so that's what I discovered. Well, then I started looking for my recipes in my recipe book. Couldn't find anything. I found recipes in my Greek cookbook because you use it for making moussaka. Mm-hmm. And then I found a recipe for baklava that used it. Then I started hunting around, and I thought, oh boy, here is my great big thick book of spices and herbs. There was a little paragraph that said, it's very useful in peaches, pears, and apples, and for sauces, and in some soups, and squash. Period. That was it. No recipes, no nothing. I said, well, at least that gets us down to the fact that it has a wider use than you generally think. And then, remembering your wise teachings, I went to Epicurus. There were 635 recipes about how to use nutmeg. Mm. So that was what it was. And then here, I brought you a present on behalf of
golly,
of all those, because I know that you probably don't have that either. And I'll point out that I have a new one too.
It's a nutmeg grater.
It's a
ladies
nutmeg
and gentlemen.
Grater.
What
and
a guy.
Nutmegs.
And nutmegs. And if you haven't seen nutmeg, it's kind of looks sort of like a little pecan. Yes, indeed. And that's the way, and I'm sure that cooks would say that's the way. If you want to get it fresh and you want the real
taste.
They would say, you know, if you have a can of nutmeg on your shelf and it's older than a couple of months, they would say throw it away because it's not going to be any good.
I read that.
Well, what a guy. Thank you very much. And yes, it has,
and
it has a little home
for just like you. Now you can be just like Emeril.
You can hang it on the wall. It's got a little house in the top. You put your nutmeg in there, and then when you're ready to use it, you scrape it off. Well, thank you.
Those are available in this town at Art Mart. They have both I like this style. There are two or three other kinds of styles of scrapers and such, but I like this style because that's the one you keep seeing on Food Channel. Mm-hmm. And they also have them at the Walnut Street Tea Company. She has fresh nutmegs and about three different styles of nutmeg graters there as well. I didn't find anybody else because I was so excited to find them. But I thought maybe you needed that for your collection.
Can always use a new kitchen gadget.
Exactly.
You can never be too thin, too rich, or have too many gadgets in your kitchen.
Exactly.
Well, thank you.
Well,
that's very nice.
You'll like that.
We have a caller here. Why don't we talk with them on line number two in Champaign. Hello. Oh, now we got you. Go ahead. No, we're not hearing the caller. How about now? Okay, we got a little problem here. We got to straighten out a couple of buttons. Let me give you the telephone number again, because if you'd like to call in, you're certainly welcome to do that. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. That's the number. And we'd be very happy to hear from folks. And again, the way we do on this program is, we encourage people to call in if you have recipes, if you have questions, if you just want to say hi, you know, whatever you would like to do, that is certainly fine. So give me a nutmeg recipe, my friend.
Why, we could always start with eggnog.
Well, okay.
And of course, then thinking of eggnog, you then cook that into a pie and you have custard pie. Now, my mother did have a can, and it's as old as I am, I know, and it was used to sprinkle on top of custard pies, and that was a necessity. She didn't, as far as I know, use it in anything else. I can't ever remember anything like that, but she did not know about scraping it or even what – you didn't know about that. Sorry. In the middle of Kansas, you never heard of a real
nutmeg. So you already bought it ground up in a little can.
In a little can.
Exactly.
Now, do you know that just as a matter of chatter, that little nut has a net around it, a red net that clings around it? That's mace.
Yes.
And that ground mace is not a substitute. It's a different flavor, but it is an important flavor. Now, the one thing that I did find out in what little reading I could find out about, and that is that the Dutch had the lock on nutmeg for many, many, many hundreds of years. They got it in the, in the Dutch East Indies. And it wasn't until nutmeg was grown in the Caribbean that it broke their hold on nutmeg. And I thought that was kind of a curiosity that the whole thing was a Dutch concern.
I'd like to know, one of the things, I guess, the only thing that I can think of right off that I have used it in where I think it's something important is in bolognese sauce. And it's not in all sauce bolognese. It's in some. Now, to me, when I taste the sauce, I say to myself, okay, this is right. I sort of feel like it should be.
But
in
you
there.
Didn't put much in.
There no, is, it can't there, be. It
there
can't
isn't
be very much.
A lot.
You don't want it to be overwhelming, but you want it. You want it to be there when you taste
it. Yeah, a little assertive, but not too pushy.
So how does this? I guess that's the thing that I think is interesting. How does this end up in Italian cooking?
About the same way that it ends up in Greek cooking, because moussaka is very much like a bolognese with meat and sauces and such, and the whole medieval world used nutmeg. It was very, very big in medieval times. I could not find any medieval recipes because somehow I don't have a medieval book. But I didn't know how they would have been used. And whenever it is in a recipe, it's very small amounts. And so, you know, an eighth, a quarter of a teaspoon is all you put in certain things. Or emerald, five little scrapes, one, two, three, yeah. four, five. And I think that's enough to do whatever it was that you wanted to do.
Yeah.
So it's just the fact that Europe had the nutmeg very early on. And so it would have spread just the same way that the Italian cuisine came up to France and then went off into England and mixed around that way. That's the yeah. way it would have happened.
Well, I do. It makes me think of at one point. I think I was watching. It was either on his television, Nick Stellino, the Italian cook who's been on public TV. It was either on his show or maybe in one of his books. He had a tomato sauce that was made to go with pasta that had something very sort of odd in it, and I want to say that it was cinnamon. And he explained that there would have been a time when if you could get something like that, it would be a sign that you were really wealthy. And as a way of flaunting it, people would put it in everything just as a way of saying, "See, I'm so rich,
exactly.
I can afford this stuff, and so I'm going to put it in everything."
And it was expensive. It was very expensive. Now one area that I found finally, I hunted through all the books that I could come up with. And, of course, now I can't find it here. Speculaas, S-P-E-C-U-L-A-A-S. It's a Dutch word. And there is a mixture of spices. It's called speculaas. And I have a recipe for speculaas cookies. And you could buy speculaas if you were any place but Champagne Urbana, unless somebody has it as a super gourmet item. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it would be, but it's a lot of cinnamon. You can make your own. 3 tablespoons of cinnamon, a tablespoon of nutmeg, a tablespoon of ginger, a teaspoon of cardamom, and a teaspoon of cardamom and. There's one more, but that makes the dry spice speculaas, and they are used in making cookies.
Yeah.
There are speculaas cookies. Somebody here in town was very famous for making what she called nutmeg cookies at Christmas time. I haven't found her name, but I do know that she was connected to home economics and lived in Urbana somewhere between Race and Vine. that's as close as I can get. I don't know her name or who it was, but she always made those cookies.
All right. Well, we have some callers.
Yes, let's.
We're going to cross our fingers and see if we can get them on the air, starting with our line number one in Champagne. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Okay, I'm Dutch, and I cannot live without nutmeg.
Oh.
And you were quite right. It comes probably from East India, the Dutch colonies. Right off the bat, I can tell you that I use it in mashed potatoes.
Mashed potatoes, yes.
On cauliflower.
Yes,
boiled cauliflower. And, of course, on green beans.
On green beans.
Yes. But you look in the Dutch cookbook or whatever.
Yes.
It goes in lots and lots of things. And your guide is speculaas. Speculaas, that is also made with a little nutmeg, probably, and we have like a honey cake, but of course use it. So there are lots of.
I kind of had an idea that there would be a lot of uses in Holland for this, because as I say, that was the center and where it all came from. The Dutch trades.
Yes.
And well, that's really good. Now, a lot of my friends have said a lot.
Yeah.
You think that everybody I've talked to has a recipe for nutmeg. Well, they do. Most of my friends use it, and I did not know this,
yeah.
with spinach.
Yes, with spinach too. Yeah.
Yes, and with spinach and and some of the green leafy vegetables and things like that.
But especially on the I wouldn't cook green beans without it. I have always on mashed potatoes.
On mashed potatoes, yes.
Yes, only the mashed potatoes are very easy. Boil the potatoes, put some cream and cream butter in it, and nutmeg over it. Also, they do it on, endive.
Brussels
endive. Yes.
Another green vegetable, yes.
Cook the endives and put it with breadcrumbs and mashed potatoes and a little butter. Brown that in the oven.
It covers over the top. Then it's sprinkle it over the top.
Right, and it gets a little crusty, but I cannot tell you in what I use it, but here is a store, and it's called the Tea Company, and when I come in, the lady knows already. I'm a big customer. I get four nutmeg nuts.
Oh, yes.
And I scrape it, of course, myself, because that is cheaper and tastes way better.
And it tastes better. Yes, it does.
Hardly anything. And what I taught you, I use it every day.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm glad to talk to you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580 is Doyle Moore, the man we like to call our chef in residence. He stops by each month and has been doing that for a long time on the first Wednesday in the 10 o'clock hour, and we talk about food, and we always have fun when he is here, concentrating on some particular thing, a dish, an ingredient, and this time around he said, let's talk about nutmeg, because he just recently discovered, and amazing at his age, he just recently discovered how many things you can do with it, and that it, a lot of people would say, as the last caller, that it has an affinity for some root vegetables and some greens and maybe some fruits and almost anything that has eggs in it.
Yes.
Custard sort of items.
White sauces,
those sorts of things.
And any egg sauce.
Yeah. All right. And if you have a recipe, maybe you'd like to share it with
us. Please.
333-9455, toll free 800-222.
And if anyone knows the secret recipe of the nutmeg cookies made by the secret lady in Urbana, probably 15 years ago or so. I'm sure it was somewhere around then. I'd like to know about that, too.
All right. Well, let's talk with someone else. This is line 2. Caller's in Urbana. Hello.
Not exactly a recipe, but we were at the Hellman restaurant in Chicago a number of years ago. It was an Afghan restaurant. Don't even know if it still exists.
Uh-huh.
And we were having tea at the end of the meal, and they brought the tea out with what looked like a pepper shaker, which they proceeded to sprinkle on top of the tea. And I thought, my God, they're putting pepper on my tea and not even asking me. But then I caught a whiff, and they were sprinkling freshly grated
fresh nutmeg.
And it was lovely because this lovely aroma from the warmed hot tea wafted up into your nostrils, and it was...
That would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it never occurred to me.
Now, someone told me in my investigation, as a child, drugstore that sold ice cream had a shaker of nutmeg that you put on your ice cream as a treat. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have imagined that, but there it was. And I've never heard of putting it in the tea, but I can see that as little as you would put in would make a nice perfume.
Well, talking about that reminds me that our favorite flavor of ice cream is cinnamon ice cream.
Oh.
And I don't know where to find it around here, but we can find it in Ohio. We've got an electric cooler that we can plug in, and it keeps the ice cream cold long enough.
Oh, good for you.
Back here. Yeah, there's a company that makes it and sells it in stores.
Cinnamon.
Yeah, cinnamon. And it tastes... We finally persuaded the guy who stocks the ice cream at this particular grocery store that you can get it at all times of the year. He thinks that it's just for Christmas, but it is marvelous. Strawberries.
Sure.
One time we had to be out in Ohio supervising some work that we couldn't do ourselves, and we're there for like a week and a half during strawberry season, and we have a lot of Amish neighbors, and the strawberries are very, very affordable. So we would go buy a flat of strawberries, and the two of us would with cinnamon ice cream. We'd have them for breakfast, lunch, and supper, and our Amish neighbors couldn't believe that we were going through strawberries like that and not preserving them.
Anyway, of course.
I'm digressing from your point, but it's an interesting program.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much. I've not heard of tea and nutmeg.
No, me neither.
Well, see what I mean? Here we, you and me together are as old as the hills. And we know about it, but we don't know about it. And all of a sudden, you find that everyone knows about it. Yeah. I love it.
All right. Well, let's talk with someone else.
Let's talk to some more who knows about it.
Some more who knows about it. We have a caller in Southern Illinois on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Good morning. I have a book called The Spice Cookbook. It's from 1964.
Uh-huh.
And it talks about, in each chapter, the different spices, and nutmeg is listed as having, if you want to have an interesting hobby, collect nutmeg graters.
Oh.
Because they say that...
Well, David just started his new hobby.
So many types of graters were made because tinsmiths and tinkers,
yes,
in Europe used to make pierced tin kinds in their spare time. It said older graters, usually English or European, were made of sterling silver. There were also folding types, and small enough to be carried in a gentleman's waistcoat. At his club or a grog shop, he was able to grate the nutmeg into hot punch.
His own. You would carry your own nutmeg and your own grater, and you would have that to put on the top of a posset or a syllabub or whatever.
Hot punch.
Yes.
Yeah. He said wealthy men carried their own supply of nutmeg in as a modern man carries a cigarette case.
Yes.
The ladies carried them in a folding nutmeg the size of a lipstick. Or they also carried a whole nutmeg in a filigreed silver case suspended by a silver chain, which made everything smell delightfully spicy.
It would be a little pomander, yes, mm-hmm, that you'd wear around. Oh, how interesting.
This is a very interesting book. It says the flavor of nutmeg is sweet with a warm, spicy undertone. The Scandinavians use nutmeg in meatballs. The Germans include it in potato dumplings. It also has a recipe for a cookie called the old-time nutmeg hermit. It might be similar to what you're looking for.
Well, it might be it.
I'll give you the ingredients.
Yes, please.
It's very short. It says sift together 4 cups of flour, 1 teaspoon of soda, 1.5 teaspoons of ground nutmeg, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt. And then set that aside and blend 2 cups of brown sugar with 1 cup of soft butter.
Mm-hmm.
Beat in 4 eggs. Add the flour mixture alternately with 1/4 cup of milk. And then stir in seedless raisins, 2 cups of seedless raisins, and 1 cup of nuts.
2 cups of raisins and 1 cup of nuts.
Of chopped nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mix all that together and drop from a teaspoon, 1.5 inches apart. Top each cookie with a big seeded raisin if desired. Bake in a preheated moderate oven, 375 degrees.
375, 15 minutes.
It makes
you know, that sounds like it, because the only spice that you're putting in there is nutmeg.
Yes.
And so you would indeed call that a nutmeg cookie, wouldn't you?
And 1.5 teaspoons is quite a lot.
A lot of scraping.
I wondered if you found out in any of your reading. I heard years ago, I read a lot about herbs, that nutmeg was smuggled into prisons because it's hallucinogenic in large quantities.
I did not know that.
But it's also very toxic in large quantities.
I would expect that, because it has oils and such things in it that could sort of build up, yes.
But that's the only cookie recipe I could find.
Well, good. Thank you very much.
I'm going to be starting to use more nutmeg this winter, I guess.
Yes, indeed. Always, always on spinach, and always on sweet potatoes. And then so many people are telling about putting it on mashed potatoes, and I'd heard other. And, oh, yes, and one of my friends has a meatball recipe that is Swedish, and the Swedish meatballs have nutmeg in it. That was another of my friends who said, oh, well, you know, if we make Bruce's meatballs, you have to put nutmeg in it. I said, you've never told me that. And it's one of those things that no one talks about.
Secret ingredient.
That's it. The secret. Yes, the secret ingredient. That's good.
And, of course, apple pie.
And apple pie and pear pie and peach pie.
Mm-hmm.
All of those.
Well, thank you, Doyle.
Yes.
Always nice to hear you.
Well, thank you. See you later.
Thanks for the call. We're already at our midpoint here of this hour of Focus 580, our monthly program on cooking with the man we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore, and he stopped by here once a month, always on a Wednesday, first Wednesday, 10 o'clock. We talk about cooking and pick something, and we talk about it, and we'll also have a good time. And his thought this time around was he's interested in finding out about nutmeg and the different ways that you can use it, because once you start looking, you actually find a lot of recipes that use it. And as we said at the beginning, I'll bet, though, we could go around to a lot of folks, and we'd go into their kitchen, and we'd open up the cupboards, and we'd find a little tin of ground nutmeg, and if we said to them, okay.
A rusty tin.
Very likely. When was the last time you used this? They might say, I don't know. So, first of all, throw that away.
Tom and Jerry's.
Or grated on your tea or whatever. And so now I want everybody to go out and get some nutmeg and put it in.
In everything,
yeah. We have some other callers here. Let's go to somebody on line number two, and that would be someone in Savoy. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Hi.
Yes.
The first time we traveled to Europe, we went to Holland and went to a restaurant, which is just a plain, not very fancy one. And they had green beans that were so good that I asked the chef what was in it. And he said nutmeg. And I had never, ever heard of that before. But wow, what a difference.
Yeah, they were just sprinkled on top?
No, it was just within the green beans themselves.
Oh, just so it was mixed up?
It was mixed up. It was either cooked in it or whatever.
But I'm sure it wasn't a whole lot, because that's just not, you don't put a whole lot in, but I imagine a quarter of a teaspoon would be my guess.
Good.
Green beans, yes, well, the lady that called in first mentioned green beans and cauliflower, so we have two strikes for green beans.
The other thing that I have is I went shopping someplace, and I can't tell you where, it's probably a specialty store, and I have a nutmeg grinder.
Is it a grinder or a shaver?
Well, no, what it is it's a little glass bottle,
uh-huh,
and it has a grinder mechanism in the lid. And you turn it upside down and you grind it. And it's got inside, it looks like, not pebbles exactly, but almost like a nut that would be cut up.
Oh, I see.
And then you just grind it.
Oh, I see. So probably that was prepared for that grinder.
Yeah, and it's really great because it does taste much better.
Now, I do know that there is a shaver that you twist a knob and you shave a very thin shaving. I don't care for that because it ends up looking like wood shavings,
and I want it
smaller. And so I really like this Pierce tin, the oldest style that we have.
Yeah.
So
I've got one of those too, but I don't use it very much.
There are several of those varying kinds of nutmeg graters here in town, so look for them. They're at the Art Mart and at the Walnut Street Tea Company.
Well, this little cup thing that I have works really well. I mean, the bottle thing.
The bottle thing,
it really works.
A grinder. Well, that's interesting.
I mean, it's kind of like you can buy little spice mills.
Yes.
That come with sea salt.
Yes.
And once you finish them, you throw them out.
I see. Uh-huh.
And that's what this one's like.
Uh-huh.
So.
Oh, that's good. A little grind. Well, I'll have to find out about that.
Okay. Good.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Thank
you
so much. Well, now, okay. We're gathering information here from callers. We had apparently someone called in off the air in response to this question about nutmeg and its hallucinatory effects and its toxicity. And someone called in and said this. For what it's worth, they said, to achieve this hallucinatory effect would require 10 grams.
Mercy.
Which is an awful lot. So please don't do this. And also, apparently, it can be toxic even in small amounts for certain individuals.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, our director this morning, Henry, said that he was certain that at one time when he bought fresh nutmeg at Strawberry Fields, one of our local places you can buy bulk stuff, he said he remembered there was actually a warning for people with heart trouble related to ingesting nutmeg. So, keep this in mind, everybody. Although I don't know that how many people would be endangered by a tiny bit of it that you might use in a recipe, but I guess that's something to keep in mind. That even, again, according to what this caller said, that it can be toxic for certain people, even in very small amounts.
Now, in the back of my mind, I recall at one time there was a fad for smoking cigarettes with a spice in it.
It was clove.
Was it clove?
Yes.
It wouldn't have been nutmeg by chance.
Nutmeg. No. It apparently one of the things that it does, oil of clove, is it has a kind of anesthetizing effect.
It does because you use that
That's
for
right.
teeth. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Oak clove oil you have for your teeth.
Yeah. There are certain parts of the world that's a big thing, clove cigarettes. I don't know if that's so much of a fad anymore, but yes, you're right, for a while it certainly was.
I just recall hearing it.
All right. Well, let us go on.
Yes.
No telling where we're going to end up here.
Well, one of the members of the staff here has a note that said, freshly grated into very well-drained Brussels sprouts, which have either been tossed with a small amount of unsalted butter or low-fat, full-fat yogurt. So Brussels sprouts get
I'm
get
sorry,
nutmeg.
There's nothing you can do for a Brussels sprout.
Yes, you can. You can put yogurt.
Nutmeg. And no, I'm sorry. That will not fix what's wrong with a Brussels sprout. No, I'm sorry.
Well.
let's talk with somebody else here before the Brussels sprout growers get after me. Someone in Stell this morning on line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
What I do with nutmeg every morning is I start breakfast with a fruit smoothie. You could put half a mango or a banana or whatever, and a quarter of a Haas avocado. And I put stevia leaves in it to sweeten it a little more.
Yes.
And I guess you know that stevia is the only alkaline-forming sweetener. All other sweeteners, like honey, are acid.
Yes.
In the body. But in any case, I keep a hammer on my counter, and I just hit a nutmeg into a bunch of pieces. And when I take a small piece and drop it in the blender when I make this smoothie, and then I don't have to worry about grating it or anything.
Oh, yes.
But it adds a perfect little touch to a fruit smoothie.
Well, that's very good. I've never thought of that either. But I see you've got vegetables and fruit. Well, since it does
that was two kinds of fruit, avocado and sweet fruit. Oh, I see. You're summing up the whole thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Now, mentioning heart problems, the person who called in mentioned something about heart. I guess you know that if people eat Celtic salt, that coarse, gray, moist salt that comes from the north of France, it will reverse heart conditions.
Well, no, I did not know that.
Uh-huh. It will also make you lose weight. I've been eating it for 5 years, and I cannot put a pound on, even though I eat palm oil, butter.
My.
And coconut oil and everything. I just eat any quantity, and it does not put an ounce on me.
Well, for heaven's sake, I didn't know that. I'll have to look into that.
Celtic salt. It's available in health food stores.
Yes,
usually.
Yes, and it's gray, and I'm trying to remember. There, it comes from foam. I think they gather foam, and then the foam is dried, and that's what makes the salt.
I don't know.
Something like that.
I know that they have these big vats where they collect the seawater in northern France to make it. But it's said that there is no heart problem or overweight issue in France because they all eat that salt.
Because they all have the Celtic salt, yes. I'm trying to think. Now, I've not heard it named Celtic salt, but it might be the flowers of the sea.
I think I have seen that.
Fleur de mer.
Uh-huh.
Something like that. And that comes from drying foam.
Mm-hmm. And the reason it's so helpful is that it has the full panoply of trace minerals and coarser minerals in their proper synergistic combination. So it makes the body work perfectly.
Well, that's good to know. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Well, bye-bye. Thank you. Let us continue here. We have some other folks to talk with, two Urbana listeners. Next up would be line number one right here. Hello.
Hi, this is Barbara.
Uh-huh.
I have a recipe for you. It's we use nutmeg in Streuselkuchen. I'm German.
Oh, yes.
And we put it in the Streusel together with the butter, sugar, and flour. And especially good on rhubarb cakes.
Oh, rhubarb. Yes, I bet it, ooh, I bet it would be good on rhubarb.
Yeah, and have you ever heard of the, it's called Makis, that's translated would be, or in German it's translated as nutmeg flour. It's actually the shell of the nutmeg.
Oh, no, I don't know about that.
And it's a little more elegant in taste, but it tastes like nutmeg.
Huh.
Yeah, it's called M-A-C-I-S, Makis.
A-C-I-S.
Uh-huh. And it's the, yeah, we call it, and if you go to Germany, you'll find it under nutmeg flour.
Nutmeg flour, huh. Makis. Hmm.
Okay, yeah, that's what I, yeah. Is there anything you want to know about this?
Do you have a cookie recipe, was it?
Yeah, about the rhubarb tart.
Oh, yes.
It's actually in grams.
That's all right.
It's 125 grams of flour, 50 grams of sugar, one egg yolk, a little bit of salt, 65 grams of butter or margarine. That's for the dough.
Yes.
And the cover is 70 grams of breadcrumbs.
Breadcrumbs, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
65 grams of butter.
65.
Mm-hmm. 100 grams sugar.
100 grams sugar, yes.
And the nutmeg, of course. It yeah. depends on your taste.
About how much you, will it be a quarter of a teaspoon or
think,
a half a teaspoon?
Quarter, I would think.
A quarter of a teaspoon, mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. And 500 grams rhubarb.
500 grams of rhubarb.
So that's the rhubarb, and then you make the streusel, and that's 200 grams of flour, 100 grams of sugar, and again a quarter of a teaspoon of nutmeg, and 150 grams of butter or margarine.
150, mm-hmm.
So it's a layered cake.
Yes. Okay, and how do you put that together? You've got a dough and a filling and a topping.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just layer that?
Mm-hmm, you layer that. It's like a net dough. And you should put it in the refrigerator for about 30 minutes before you bake it.
Oh, yes, and how do you bake it? What temperature?
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's see. Where is it? It's 200, how can I convert this? Is it about 400 Fahrenheit? It's 200 grads Celsius.
200 Celsius.
Celsius. It's about 400 Fahrenheit, I think.
400, okay.
And you bake the tart for 15 minutes.
15?
Mm-hmm.
15 minutes, okay.
And that's on the... in the middle, and then you bake the tart another 18 minutes on the top.
Oh, plus 18 minutes on top.
And you serve it with whipping cream.
On the top. Okay. Good. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
A rhubarb tart.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All
bye.
Right. Well, thank you.
I just had a rhubarb tart 3 days ago. And I wondered how she made it. I think this is it.
All right. Well, let's talk with somebody else here. Let's go to another caller, and this is Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I've just tuned in. Have you gotten to pancake yet?
No.
Okay. There was only one time of the year when nutmeg was used in our family. I guess we were not an adventurous culinary group. But during the Passover, when flour and other risible items were not allowed, my dad would make breakfast with finely ground matzo meal.
Yes.
And he'd make a mixture of beaten eggs, some sugar, salt, a little oil, mix that and aerate it a bit with a whisk.
Yes.
And then he'd stir in, without really mixing hard, a certain amount of the matzah meal.
Yes.
That whole mixture was then put into a hot, greased pan and cooked. And this was maybe 12, maybe 16 inches across, depending on how many.
Mm-hmm. So it would be like a great big, one great big pancake.
Exactly.
Hot, greased pan, yes.
Until I was very old, I assumed pancake.
Oh.
The cake you cooked in a pan rather than the oven.
I see.
When it was set on the bottom, he managed somehow to flip the whole thing over.
Oh, yeah.
That would be, because it was not lidded and cooked that way. It was cooked open.
On top, yes.
And flipped over. And as I said, I assumed a pancake was simply cooked in a pan on the stovetop, because when you cut into it, it was perhaps 3/4 inch. On a day when he was very energetic, it was thicker than that.
Hmm.
It all depends on how much air he got into it. But it was golden, and it had a crumb structure, and it had a good moisture because of the oil incorporated in the mix.
Oh, yes, and an egg. Uh-huh.
And the egg.
It would puff up just a little tiny bit.
It just makes me think of a warm pound cake or other cake.
Oh, I see, yes.
Rather than a cooled oven cake.
Now, how do we get the nutmeg in it?
The point of the call is that invariably some of the family would ask to have powdered sugar sprinkled on top of it.
Oh, yes.
As we were eating it.
Yes.
He would grate nutmeg on top.
Mm.
You can just imagine the brown color.
Oh, yes.
Texture as it came out of the pan, and then the nutmeg just kind of disappearing like camouflage on the surface. But as soon as it hit the surface, as one of the previous callers said, the fragrance.
Oh, yes. Yes, it would waft right up.
And I always associated sugar topping with kids, and that when you got to be an adult, your taste changed, and you wanted to move from an extra sweetener to an extra savory. And that was the only time he had a nutmeg grater, and he had a pouch for whole nutmegs. And I don't think I've seen him or my mother cook with nutmegs on anything else.
Anything else but that.
Just idiosyncratic, or perhaps they knew something I didn't. But it's true, as previous callers have said, on warm items, as the nutmeg is added last,
yes.
Get the fragrance. If you were to incorporate it, I'm sure, and heat it, the volatiles would be lost. You'd get a good nutmeg.
I think that's
right?
A very good point to think about.
Fragrance.
Yes.
Well, enjoy the nutmegs any way you do.
Well, thank you.
Goodbye.
That's right, a treat. That's a treat. Matzah meal, eggs, sugar, salt, oil, and whisk those together, and then put them in the pan, into a hot, greased pan. And fry. There is a thing that's very much like that, kind of, except it's not flipped over, and that's the German pancake or a Dutch baby.
Oh,
it's
uh-huh.
sometimes, but it crawls up the side, and I think there's a lot more eggs in it, and it kind of fills up and becomes on the side. But this sounds like it, and he says 3/4 inch thick, so that sounds like a very thick, heavy pancake. Can't you see Papa flipping that? I love it.
We have 5, 6, 7 minutes left, something like that.
Well,
we have another caller.
Well, let's talk to
all
them.
Right, on line one in Champaign.
Now, I told you there was going to be a lot of nutmeg, and yet both of us don't know anything about it. I mean, well, somehow, I just love this.
Yeah.
Keep
well,
going.
Hello there, caller.
Hi.
Hi.
I usually use nutmeg in sweet potato type things,
mm-hmm.
like candy sweet
mm-hmm.
potatoes or sweet potato pie. Also French toast. I like it on French toast.
French toast, yes.
Yeah, but I also put some when I make sausage gravy.
Uh-oh. Sausage. Well, that's a white sauce.
Yeah.
And then it has meat in it.
Yeah, and it seems just to be the perfect thing to have in there.
You see, it sounds very much like that Mediterranean medieval taste that we were talking about mm-hmm. earlier. I'll bet that is in the sausage gravy.
Yeah, tried. But I guess I really want to know more recipes that with meat that would use nutmeg or some other kind of.
If you could look up some of them, I don't have all of them here. Oh, let's see. Number one, yes, I can give you one real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Eggplant sausage and ziti casserole. That's eggplants, and this is from Emerald's new book, The Potluck Emerald. Go out and read it and copy
yeah.
it. It's the eggplant sausage and ziti casserole, and he uses nutmeg in it when he makes the white sauce. And it has black olives and tomatoes and tomato paste and garlic and onions and sausage. And
what kind of sausage?
Now, here he wants a pound of Italian sausage removed from casings. However, I couldn't get it when I went to a store in Indiana, and I got Bob Evans hot sausage,
mm-hmm.
and I used that, and I didn't put any red peppers in that because I felt it was going to be hot enough. So I used the sausage and the onions and the tomato paste and the garlic and the tomatoes, and those are all cooked up, and then a can of it says a half a cup, but see, I put a can of black olives in. And then you use 4 tablespoons of butter, 4 tablespoons of flour, and 2 cups of milk, and make the white sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And then you you take the eggplant and you cut it and fry it, and until it's a little bit brown. Then you layer the eggplant, and on top of the eggplant you layer. You need some pasta, and here they use ziti, but I use the swirly curly kind because I didn't have any ziti. So you layer eggplant, and then the pasta, and then the meat on top of that, and then again eggplant and pasta and meat, and then you pour all of the white sauce on top of that. And on top of that, you put in a cup of grated mozzarella and a half a cup of grated Parmesan and bake it in the oven for about 30 minutes at, let's see how hot, 375. And it's awfully good.
It sounds
and it's
great.
Even better the next day. So what it really comes out to be is very much like moussaka. The Greek or Mediterranean form of an eggplant casserole with meat and white sauce, but this one has the added bit of pasta in it. That is a real good one. And then do look up the moussaka recipe in a Greek book. You'll find it in that, or whoever has a moussaka, you'll probably find it in that, because that has. Meat and white sauce in it, and those are the two. That's like your sausage gravy. That's what I said.
All right.
Just like it.
Well, thanks a lot.
Sure.
I love listening to you.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you very much for the call. We're coming down to the point here. We have a couple minutes left, maybe two, three minutes left. Would you like to give another recipe?
Yes. Here's one that I am going to do. This, of course, comes from you-know-who, Epicurus, got it last night. It's a Guinness Stout ginger cake, and it sounds so good. I'll give the ingredients very fast then. Speaking of that,
yeah.
Please tell people how to get onto the web and get the archive of programs. Because they can listen to this day after tomorrow.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Go to our website. It's will.uiuc.edu. And the Focus 580 programs are there. You need a little software program, and as long as your computer has the right stuff in it, it'll work. And you can download this free program, and anybody can then go to the archives, and you can listen to past Focus,
listen
AFMEG,
to the past ones, yes.
Whatever. So that way, yeah, it might be the easiest way to get to something that we've talked about
it's
in the past.
Exactly.
Just to go and listen to the show again.
And there are 4 years there, so there's 48 programs.
A lot of stuff there.
You're going to find it fine. I'll give this real quick, and then you can go and listen to it. A cup of Guinness Stout, a cup of molasses, a half a tablespoon of baking soda, 3 large eggs, a half cup of granulated sugar, a half cup of dark brown sugar, 3/4 of a cup of grapeseed or vegetable oil, 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 2 tablespoons of ground ginger, 1 1/2 teaspoons of baking powder, 3/4 of a teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/4 of ground cloves, 1/4 of nutmeg, 1/8 teaspoon of cardamom, and 1 tablespoon of grated fresh ginger root. So you can imagine that you mix the wet stuff together and then the dry stuff together. And you're going to boil the beer and the molasses and turn it off and let it slow down a bit. And then the eggs and the sugar and the oil. And then in a separate bowl, get the flour. And you combine all of that and whisk it together and pour the batter into a loaf pan and bake for an hour. And apparently that is so good because it's moist, it's dark, it's fragrant, and it's kind of like a gingerbread. And then I love the people who say, well, I didn't like this because I left out some of the ginger and I put more something else in. And she put more nutmeg in, strangely enough. And another person says that... She just didn't add the fresh ginger. She thought it would be too much. And another critic says that she baked it as a substitute for chocolate cake, and everyone loved it more than they did her chocolate cake. So it would be worth it. And then look it up on Epicurious. It's called the Guinness Stout Ginger Cake. So you can find it there, or you can listen to our radio program anytime you want.
Sounds pretty good to me. Well, we're going to have to stop there because we have used our time.
The old clock on the wall.
Afraid so. But next month, and by that time, I guess we'll be talking about March.
Well,
we'll be back. We'll
it will be. It'll be March.
Doyle Moore's, man, we like to call our chef in residence here once a month, first Wednesday, 10 o'clock hour. We talk about cooking and we'll always have a good time. We'll try to get some of these recipes typed up if you want to drop us a line. But as Doyle said, maybe one of the easiest thing, if you have the internet, you can go to our website and go to the web archive and you can listen to the program again. Other Focus shows, Afternoon Magazine, all of our local production is there, will.uiuc.edu. Thank you very much for being here.
Yep.